where His Eminence says that whenever the blessings of Allah are plentiful to someone, the needs of the people around him start to become great. And one who does not undertake this responsibility, this will cause those blessings to disappear. So here again, we find that in an environment where people are becoming poor and a very small handful of people who have political power and are able to bully other peoples are becoming richer. And of course, in between all of this economic and financial corruption, the common masses are hurting and the common masses are suffering. And we find that in this kind of an environment, this divinely appointed imam, this guide of humanity, this leader of perfection, tells the people that if you have a certain blessing, again, whether it is power or wealth or status or influence, you must use this blessing which has been given to you by the Almighty Allah in order to help the people around you. And the misuse of these kind of blessings, whether it is wealth or power or status or influence or whatever it may be, the misuse of these things lead to these blessings being taken away from one in one way or the other. It might not be immediate, but eventually it will be taken away. And for example, if for some reason it isn't taken away and the individual dies, well, surely they will be judged upon this and they will be punished accordingly in the hereafter. But in our daily lives, we must realize that if Allah has blessed us with wealth or power or influence or status, then we must try our very, very best to help our fellow brother Muslims and our fellow sister Muslims all across the world. That is in reality why Allah has given us these blessings. First and foremost, these blessings are a means for a test to see if we succeed. And the second is again a test to see whether we will help others or not with that which has been given to us by the Almighty Allah. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to a shorter speech by Shaykh Ayyub Rashid.
Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, according to what he mentioned to his companions, he said that min aklatin mana'at akalat. Subhanallah. Kam min aklatin. How many a time one meal mana'at akalat may stop you to gain and to get the moments of eating many meals. It doesn't mean literally. Kam aklatin. How many a time one food, haram food, you eat one time, mana'at akalat, will stop you to get the halal food for many years, for many times. He wants us to be aware that when we make our decisions sometimes, I want to take this job. Look careful. Is it halal or haram? Because one job and that which you gain from that, if it is from haram, it may stop you to gain that halal for many years. We need to be aware of that.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, Fi Amanillah, and God bless you all.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulema's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hojjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
مادر مورد ما حسین علیه الصلاه و السلام میگه این حسین کیست که عالم همه دیوانه اوست.
Regarding Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, we read in a beautiful poem, "Who is Hussein who alone enchanted all the people in the world? Who is Hussein who alone attracts the hearts of all freedom seekers across the world?" In another poem, we read, "Ali is the true successor of Prophet Muhammad, and this was Fatima who alone supported him." We all know that only Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra protected the right of imamate of Imam Ali alayhi salam after the demise of Prophet Muhammad.
پس این که میگن با یه گل بهار نمیشه
اشتباه. Therefore, the Prophet which says, "A single flower doesn't bring spring," is, in my opinion, wrong. Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra showed to the world that even a single person can defend true Islam. Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra was alone. However, she stood against the oppression singly and acted based on the Quran, which invites the people to rise up for Allah's sake. In better words, she defended the concept of Walaya all alone when alive. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hojjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about our program on Call of Islam page, IRIB English Radio, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
In the limelight. In recent years, global warming has become a major environmental problem. Many of us are always faced with news relating to the global warming, and we hear warnings about the worsening situation. As time passes, we will experience the effects of global warming on our lives. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more details. Britain's Met Office predicts next year is forecast to be one of the hottest on record, with global average temperatures forecast to be above 1.2 degrees Celsius, above what they were before humans started to drive climate change. If correct, it will be the 10th year in a row to see global average temperatures reach at least 1 degree Celsius above what they were used to be in pre-industrial times, measured as the period 1850 to 1900. The current hottest year on record, dating back to 1850, is 2016, a year that saw an El Niño climate pattern in the Pacific Ocean, which pushes up global temperatures on top of global warming trends. Professor Adam Scaife, head of long-range predictions at the Met Office, said, "Without a preceding El Niño to boost global temperatures, 2023 may not be a record-breaking year, but with the background increase in global greenhouse gas emissions continuing apace, it is likely that next year will be another notable year in the series." The Met Office's Dr. Nick Dunstan, who has led the 2023 global temperature forecast, said, "The global temperature over the last 3 years has been influenced by the effect of a prolonged La Niña, where cooler than average sea surface temperatures occur in the tropical Pacific." Dr. Nick Dunstan added, "La Niña has a temporary cooling effect on global average temperature. For the next year, our climate model is indicating an end to the 3 consecutive years with La Niña state, with a return to relatively warmer conditions in parts of the tropical Pacific." Dr. Dunstan said this shift is likely to lead to global temperatures in 2023 being warmer than 2022. Dr. Douglas Smith, a leading Met Office expert in climate prediction, added, "The fact that global average temperatures are at or above 1 degree Celsius for a decade masks the considerable temperature variation across the world." Dr. Douglas Smith said, "Some locations, such as the Arctic, have warmed by several degrees Celsius since pre-industrial times." The Met Office is forecasting a global average temperature of between 1.08 degrees Celsius and 1.32 degrees Celsius above what it was in the second half of the 19th century. Last year, the Met Office predicted 2022's global temperature will be between 0.97 degrees Celsius and 1.21 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, with a central estimate of 1.09 degrees Celsius. Data for the year to October suggests the temperature is about 1.16 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial era. Meanwhile, the Hindustan Times has also reported on the same story. The team, coordinated by the United Kingdom's Meteorological Office, in their first 5-year general outlook, said there is a 93% chance that the world will set a record for hottest year by the end of 2026. Teams of meteorologists across the globe predicted the world is creeping closer to the warming threshold international agreements are trying to prevent, with nearly a 50-50 chance that Earth will temporarily hit that temperature mark within the next 5 years. A team of 11 different forecast centres predicted for the World Meteorological Organization, WMO, recently, with human-made climate change continuing, there's a 48% chance that the globe will reach a yearly average temperature of 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels of the late 1800s, at least once between now and 2026, a bright red signal in climate change negotiations and climate science. Britain's Met Office senior scientist Leon Hermanson, who coordinated the report, said, "We're going to see continued warming in line with what is expected with climate change. Those forecasts are big-picture global and regional climate predictions on a yearly and seasonal timescale," based on long-term averages and state-of-the-art computer simulations. They're different and increasingly accurate weather forecasts that predict how hot or how wet a certain day will be in specific places. But even if the world hits that mark of 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times, the globe has already warmed about 1.1 degrees Celsius, or about 2 degrees Fahrenheit, since the late 1800s. That's not quite the same as the global threshold first set by international negotiators in the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. In 2018, a major United Nations science report predicted dramatic and dangerous effects on people and the world if warming exceeds 1.5 degrees Celsius. Several scientists said the global 1.5 degree threshold is about the world being that warm, not for 1 year, but over a 20 or 30 year time period. This is not what the report predicts. Hermansen said meteorologists can only tell if Earth hits that average mark year, maybe a decade or two, after it is actually reached there, because it is a long-term average. Climate scientist Zeke Hofstra of the tech company Stripper and Berkeley Earth, who wasn't part of the forecast team, said the prediction makes sense given how warm the world already is, and an additional tenth of a degree Celsius, nearly 0.2 degrees Fahrenheit, is expected because human-caused climate change in the next 5 years. And to add the likelihood of a strong El Niño, the natural period warming of parts of the Pacific Ocean that alter world weather, which could toss another couple of tenths of a degree on top of that temporarily, and the world gets very close to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The English website of Al Jazeera Network has also reported on the same story. A new United Nations report has found that the past 8 years were the 8 hottest ever recorded, indicating the world is now deep into the climate crisis. It said the internationally agreed 1.5 degrees Celsius limit for global heating is now barely within reach. The report by the United Nations World Meteorological Organization, WMO, set out how record high greenhouse gases in the atmosphere are driving sea level and ice melting to new highs and supercharging extreme weather from Pakistan to Puerto Rico. The World Meteorological Organization estimates that the global average temperature in 2022 will be about 1.15 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial average, meaning every year since 2016 has been one of the warmest years on record. For the past 2 years, the natural La Niña climate phenomena has actually kept global temperatures lower than they would otherwise have been. The inevitable switch back to El Niño conditions will see temperatures surge even higher in the future, on top of global heating.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear listeners, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of Back to Reality. This is Asma, your humble host. Once more, I have the privilege to be here with two very dear guests, Sister Zainab and Sister Bita. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Thank you, Sister Asma.
Thank you for being here.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you. Today I'm really happy that I have the honor to be here with you too and our dear listeners.
Thank you. And we have the pleasure to have you both in here.
Thank you.
So now, as the ritual of this program, I would like you to give us a very brief introduction about yourself.
All right. I am Zainab Askari, and I am done with Master's in Linguistics from Kashmir University, and then I came to Iran, and I'm studying in the seminary school right now.
So I wish you luck. And you, Sister Vita?
I'm Vita, a medical student who is really interested in that sort of discussions.
They say you can't pretend forever. Is it true?
It could be. Pretending is difficult because wearing a mask for every single aspect of your life, every time, everywhere, with everyone, it is difficult. But it's not impossible, I think. You know, there are some people who have the art of pretending. And unfortunately, this is the reality that we are facing in the social world and everywhere we go. There are some people who are pretending to be good people, but deep inside, they're not good people.
They're rabble-rousers.
Yeah, exactly. And even they don't think that what they are doing is good. You know, the thing I want to tell you is that sometimes they are doing something which is good, which is acceptable, but deep in themselves, they hate doing this. And this is disaster because you are showing a paradoxical identity of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And there is absolutely cure for this, but it's really difficult to cure these kind of habits.
Being a spontaneous person is very good. You know, these people can never pretend because everything seems, just imagine, they are this volcano that suddenly is going to explode.
Yeah.
So this impulsiveness is something good, I guess.
But pretending is sometimes a necessity.
And because you said it already, you said it's an art. I would say it's a skill. Pretending is a skill that not many people have it. But those who have it, they have it perfectly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree, but as you asked, Sister Bida, can one pretend forever? I don't think so, because it comes with lies.
Yeah.
And you can't lie forever. And it's been proven that a person who lies, he has to lie. He has to lie different times for a particular thing. And then he himself does not remember what I lied before just to achieve this thing. And now he has to lie again.
Yeah.
You are talking about pretending like it is something really strange in another planet.
No, it's
realistic. Haven't you ever pretended?
Let's ask Sister Bita.
Yeah.
Did you ever pretend?
Of course. Of course I did. You know, there were many times that I was really, for example, sad, but I pretended to be happy because I didn't want to transfer this vibe of sadness to other people.
You know? I also try pretending, but it is clear on my face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I do try to pretend.
You're that kind
of
person.
But then my eyes will reveal everything.
I know.
And I'm very sad with myself why I don't have that ability to hide it.
Actually, it depends. My mother always will understand that I'm pretending, but no one else does, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
yes, mothers have that ability.
I don't know why, but they have.
They have it intuitively, you know?
Exactly.
Sister Zainab would know more about that, right?
Because you're a mother.
When your children pretend, you know that they're pretending.
Of course I know. I have the sixth sense.
How could you understand, really? This is my question.
It's intuitive.
They are part of me. They are a part of me. So I know when they're pretending. I know when they want what. So people mostly pretend, like you since asked about children. They mostly pretend because they want to get something. Out of that pretending. So a mother knows what her child needs every time.
I would ask all the listeners and us to go for a short break, and we'll be back with the reasons of pretending. Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. We are talking about pretentious people. And why do we pretend?
because I didn't find my true self. It is because my age or something. But sometimes I lose myself, you know. It's like, okay, there is no one like me with my, I don't know, physical features and so on. And I have to make it. And this making it is somehow misunderstood with the pretending something. Pretending a model, pretending an idol, pretending a celebrity, whatever. And I think this problem comes from not understanding who really you are and what are your interests and so on. And I think the solution to not pretending in some ages, like, I don't know, teenage or something, it's that you have to go search for your interests, your, I don't know, features, your persona, and so on. And I think this is a good answer too.
That is very true. I can understand what you're saying. You know, even at the age of 40, there are some people who are that old, but still they do not know who they are.
Yeah.
And since they are imitating other people, they have to pretend.
Exactly.
They have to put some masks on their face. And they suffer, yes. They suffer and they make other people around them suffer as well. Because they are lost. They do not know what to do.
Well, I do it when I want to sound more professional. But I have to pretend to be more professional, to show those professional skills out there. And I use it at the times when I don't want every third person to know what I'm going through. Because I think that not every third person is going to understand me.
Yeah, that is very true.
They're not going to, because they have not been through the situation that I am right now. And if you're not able to pretend at that time, people are going to ask you over and over again and again. We want to know what's wrong with you and all. But you know yourself that there's no one, Allah at that particular time. Allah is always going to understand you, number one, because sometimes we think that there's some other best friend who can understand me in this material world. So, but you don't want every third person to get...
Exactly, that's very true. It's not always the solution to go and spill it out to all the other people. And you know what? Now we talked about the reasons of pretending. Sometimes it's to attract attention. Sometimes it's because I don't have a strong characteristics. Sometimes I just want other people to see the other face of me. I just don't want them to know the true me. Now, let me just ask this question. Is there any goodness in pretending? Is there any good usage for pretending?
Of course it is. Following whatever my sister told up to here, I want to tell you that one of the goodness of this pretending is in your professional job. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some people who doesn't have the kind of this differentiation between their job and their own kind of emotional life, you know?
Yeah.
And this is a disaster, I think. Because when you don't pretend in your job that, for example, you are not sad or something, everybody will come to you and ask you, okay, what happened and so on. And your job will be lost at that time. And I think this is the responsibility that you have to carry. When you are in a job, when you are on the radio, when you are wherever, you have to be happy. You have to be, I don't know, content about wherever you are.
See, let me tell you, this pretend. Way. See, sometimes even the husband, when he goes to home, he shouldn't reveal his problems at work. He shouldn't bring them to home. And then the wife, when she's working outside, she shouldn't come to home with her problems. When you have a problem with your mother and you're going to your own home that you're living with your husband and your children, you shouldn't take your personal problems into your home. Because as human beings, we have responsibility toward other people, toward every single person. If I treat my mother bad because I had a fight with my friend, then this is bad. This is so wrong.
Yeah.
If I do the other way, I have a problem at home, then I treat other people at job, at a school, at university, whatever. I treat them bad, then this is my bad. I shouldn't do it. Because we have to consider that as a human being, we have different responsibilities. And accordingly, we have to act with people.
But let me ask something. Pretending doesn't mean that you cannot speak about that or that problem with, for example, your husband and then your wife or something. I mean, you shouldn't let this pretending endure your soul or something.
Yeah.
You have to have a balance about pretending and not nagging and, you know, share your problems with other people. Mm-hmm. And have their advice.
Yeah. What do you say, sister?
That's cool. Like, you know, not to be a nagging personality, not to be that telling over and over things again and again. You know, no solution is going to be coming out of it. So you have to act sometimes to be pretending. But where does it go wrong, Sister Asma? Like, we have been, so far, I think we have been talking about the good parts of the story. But it goes wrong. It comes, rather, when it comes at sometimes it comes at a point when people misunderstand you as maybe as a good person, and you don't want that thing to be lost, you don't want that thing to be faded away, so you pretend, yes, this good thing was done by me, good deed was done by me, this good task was, I am that good person. But you're not actually. You have to be actually very straightforward. If someone misunderstood you as something like you did a kind favor to someone and you were not the person behind it, tell it. Maybe it will increase your respect. The person will find that you're more honest. So I think pretending does not always come in a positive way. It has negative impacts as well.
Of course, yeah. Mostly, generally, it is negative, but sometimes it could come in some positive ways as
well. That we talked about.
Now, let's go for a short break.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
In here, we were discussing pretending. We actually went through so much of facts, reasons, and is there any solution for it?
Balance is the main solution here, you know. You shouldn't have this vibe that I'm pretending, and because the other person will be suffering from this kind of pretending that you have. You have to avoid this. If you are at a situation that you have to pretend, and pretending is the good part of the situation, you have to know how to pretend. And I think when you know how to pretend, you know when you should pretend, and this is the solution.
Yeah, so have a balance. One of the solutions.
Exactly. Yeah, have a balance. And I think we should have that balance in this skill only in terms of when the goal is a positive goal, when I don't want other people to be sad, when I don't want...
Exactly.
But it should not be like I don't have to be practicing this skill when my goal is negative, when I want to be a hypocritic personality, when I want to show people who I am not actually... So that time I definitely don't have to practice this skill because the hypocrites are the most hated people in the way of Prophet, peace be upon him, in the eyes of Ahlul Bayt, and obviously in
you
the eyes of Allah.
You actually are mentioning a very important point. The hypocrite people are not loved, and you know they cause too much of inflictions to other people.
I asked her in the beginning, if you pretend, where do you pretend? She said, I pretend to be happy when I'm sad because I don't want the other people to be sad.
Exactly, yeah. This was all the time that we had for today's episode. We actually talked about pretending. We said that there are too much of reasons for pretending. Some people need to attract the attention of others. Some people want to get a job. They pretend to be so punctual. They pretend to be so responsible, but they are not. We also talked about the positive sort of pretending. Sometimes I don't feel good, but I have guests. I have too much of people around me, so I shouldn't bring them into my trouble. Therefore, I wear a mask, which is not actually my true face, but then I do it to save others. There must be a just reason for it. And then we talked about the solutions. We have to keep the balance. We have to focus on the very fact that pretending is different from being hypocrite. And actually, if you go too extreme in pretending, then you would turn into a hypocrite person, which is going to cause too much of problems and difficulties for other people. And then Allah is not going to be satisfied with us. So there's no problem to be yourself.
And sometimes when you want to achieve something through pretending, you can achieve that being honest.
Exactly. That's very true. And trust me, if you are going to achieve something by too much of duplicacy or too much of hypocrisy, then you're not going to have it forever. You're going to lose it one day or another. It's not going to last, and you are not going to get the bliss out of it. So that's it. Thank you for staying with us. I hope you enjoyed it. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi. Let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi. Let the Ummah rise again. let us see daylight again, once again.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The skyrocketing energy prices have cost Europe nearly $1 trillion, according to a new report stating that the current situation as the fallout of the war in Ukraine is just the beginning of the deepest crisis in decades. Citing its calculations based on market data, a report published in Bloomberg said $1 trillion is a broad tally of more expensive energy for consumers and companies in European countries. However, that's just the beginning. After this winter, the region will have to refill gas reserves with little to no deliveries from Russia, intensifying competition for tankers of the fuel. Even with more facilities to import liquefied natural gas coming online, the market is expected to remain tight until 2026, when additional production capacity from the US to Qatar becomes available. That means no respite from high prices. The report also referred to more than $700 billion pledged by the European Union governments to protect consumers and companies from soaring prices, noting that aid is becoming increasingly unaffordable as interest rates are rising and economies are already in recession amid the war in Ukraine. Government fiscal capacity is already stretched. About half of European Union member states have debt exceeding the bloc's limit of 60% of gross domestic product. A rush to fill storage last summer, despite near-record prices, has eased the supply squeeze for now, but freezing weather is giving Europe's energy system its first real test this winter. Last week, Germany's network regulator warned that not enough gas is being saved and two of five indicators, including consumption levels, have become critical. With supply tight, businesses and consumers have been asked to reduce usage. According to the International Energy Agency, the EU managed to curb gas demand by 50 billion cubic meters this year. But the region still faces a potential gap of 27 billion cubic meters in 2023. That assumes Russian supplies drop to zero and Chinese LNG imports return to 2021 levels. The main source of pipeline gas from Russia to Western Europe was Nord Stream, which was damaged in an act of sabotage in September. The region is still receiving a small amount of Russian supplies through Ukraine, but heavy shelling of energy infrastructure by the Kremlin puts the route at risk. Without this gas line, refilling storage will be challenging. Also, LNG imports into Europe are at record levels and new floating terminals are opening in Germany to receive the fuel. Government-backed buying has helped Europe attract cargoes away from China. But colder weather in Asia and a potentially strong economic recovery after Beijing eased COVID restrictions could make that more difficult. Chinese gas imports are likely to be 7% higher in 2023 than this year. Beijing has started securing LNG supplies for next year, putting it in direct competition with Europe for spare shipments. China isn't Europe's only problem. Other Asian countries are moving to procure more gas. Japan, the world's top LNG importer this year, is even considering setting up a strategic reserve, with the government also looking to subsidize purchases. For the likes of Germany, which rely on affordable energy to make products from cars to chemicals, high costs mean losing competitiveness to the US and China. That puts pressure on Chancellor Olaf Scholz's administration to maintain support for the economy. The challenge is finding the balance between keeping factories running and homes heated in the near term. The Kremlin has lashed out at a decision by the European Union to put a price cap on natural gas in order to supposedly deprive Russia of funds to continue the war against the neighboring Ukraine. The Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, said on Monday that the decision was an attack on market pricing mechanisms. Peskov's criticism came after EU energy ministers agreed to trigger a cap if gas prices exceed 180 euros per megawatt hour for 3 days on the Dutch tidal transfer facility gas hub's front-month contract, which serves as the European benchmark. The price cap can be triggered starting from February 15, 2023. Reuters reported, citing a document detailing the final deal. Three EU officials were cited by Reuters as saying that the Netherlands and Austria abstained from voting on the decision. Both countries had resisted the cap during negotiations, fearing it could disrupt Europe's energy markets and compromise Europe's energy security. The EU officials added, Germany voted to support the deal despite having raised concerns about the policy's impact on Europe's ability to attract gas supplies in price-competitive global markets. The deal followed months of debate on the idea and two previous emergency meetings that failed to clinch an agreement among countries that disagreed on whether a price cap would help or hinder Europe's attempts to contain the energy crisis. Poland, however, welcomed the agreement, saying it would be an end to what it called market manipulation by Russia and Gazprom. Russia's war in Ukraine started in late February, with Moscow saying that it was aimed at defending the pro-Russian population in the eastern Ukrainian regions of Luhansk and Donetsk against persecution by Kyiv. The cap is also aimed at punishing Russia for cutting off most of its gas deliveries to EU countries in reaction to the sanctions that the bloc has slapped on Moscow over the war. An Israeli settler has run over two Palestinian brothers near the city of Nablus in the north of the occupied West Bank, making them the latest victims of Israeli settler crimes. According to Palestinian media, Mohammad Motair and his brother Mohannad had stopped their vehicle by the side of the road near the Zatara military checkpoint south of Nablus to fix a flat tire. It was then that an Israeli settler hit the siblings, who were traveling around with their family members at the time, and fled the scene. The victim's relatives said that 28-year-old Mohammed was killed immediately after being trampled on by the settler, while his brother, 24-year-old Mohannad, was seriously injured in the same accident and was later announced dead due to his injuries. Reacting to the atrocity, Hazem Qasem, a spokesman for the Gaza Strip-based Hamas Palestinian Resistance Movement, said the settlers are escalating their aggression against Palestinians. He added that the formation of the new right-wing government in Israel has apparently emboldened settlers to ratchet up their crimes against Palestinians. He described the incident as a new episode in the series of, quote, Zionist terrorism under the protection of the regime's police and army, saying this crime must be answered by increasing the resistance in the West Bank. Israeli occupation soldiers and settlers have been noticeably escalating their attacks against Palestinian civilians in the West Bank and other areas, in an attempt to forcibly expel Palestinians from their lands and make way for expanding Israeli settlements. Israeli forces have also been conducting overnight raids and killings in the northern occupied West Bank, mainly in the cities of Jenin and Nablus, where new groups of Palestinian resistance fighters have been formed. Since the start of 2022, Israeli troops have killed more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 children, in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs described 2022 as the deadliest year for Palestinians since 2005, when the UN started to keep a tally of Palestinian fatalities. The World Body says Israeli forces have shot dead 19 Palestinians, including 3 children, in different incidents across the occupied territories between November 22nd and December 11th. In addition to the killings, Israeli forces have blocked the main entrances of several villages across the West Bank, disrupting livelihoods of thousands of Palestinians. Scores of Israeli settlers, guarded by police, have stormed the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds under the pretext of celebrating Hanukkah holiday. Earlier, the Israeli police stormed Al-Aqsa and forcibly expelled Palestinians stationed inside, paving the way for the illegal settlers to storm the compound. Israeli forces deployed heavily inside Al-Quds Old City in preparation for securing the settlers' incursions and preventing Palestinians from entering the mosque. Israeli settlers intend to storm Al-Aqsa for 8 days to celebrate the so-called Hanukkah, also known as Festival of Lights, which extends from December 18th to December 26th, as settler groups promoted the storming by announcing free transportation for its members. Israeli groups and extremist settlers had previously called for massive incursions into the holy site during the Hanukkah holidays. Hardline Israeli officials and settlers regularly stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied city, a provocative move that infuriates Palestinians. Settlers' incursions on Al-Aqsa Mosque frequently trigger clashes that leave casualties among Palestinians. Such acts of violence even led to an 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime in 2021, during which the regime forces killed at least 260 Palestinians, including 66 children. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the latest raid on Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli settlers. Hamas says such incursions are provocative and very dangerous. The movement has urged Palestinians to mobilize immediately in defense of Al-Aqsa Mosque. The resistance movement stressed the Palestinian nation will make sure to protect the mosque under any circumstances, warning Israel of the consequences of raids on the holy site. The Jewish visitation of Al-Aqsa is permitted, but as part of a decades-old agreement between Jordan, the custodian of Islamic and Christian sites in Al-Quds, and Israel in the wake of Israel's occupation of East Al-Quds in 1967, non-Muslim worship at the compound is prohibited.
When it comes to Peru, the country is unraveling quickly. Just last week, Peru's president, Pedro Castillo, was removed from office. His charge, rebellion, which came after he announced that he would shut down Congress and install a government of exception. This occurred just before he was due to face an impeachment vote. Then came his arrest, charged with allegedly breaching constitutional order. But these accusations were not enough. He was also accused of an attempted coup. Enter Castillo's vice president, Dina Boluarte. She also accused the president of a coup attempt. And just a few short hours later, she was sworn in as the new president, becoming the first female head of state in Peru's history. Boluarte called for a political truce and the installation of a national unity government. No surprise that the coup set up mass protests all across Peru. This is while the unelected government ordered a violent crackdown, with police to have killed numerous protesters. Yet things have moved rather too quickly, leading one to conclude that there may be foreign hands at play, in this instance, from the U.S. For example, just 2 days before a coup against its elected President Castillo, the ex-CIA agent and U.S. ambassador to Peru, Lisa Kenna, met with Peru's defense minister. And there are reports that Peru's defense minister, who's a retired brigadier general, ordered the military to turn against Castillo. The U.S. ambassador to Peru, Lisa Kenna, met with Peru's unelected leader, Dina Boluarte, and reiterated Washington's wholehearted support. Kenna, in another post, tweeted, "The U.S. categorically rejects any extra constitutional act by President Castillo to prevent Congress from fulfilling its mandate." This all showed that the U.S. government had staunchly supported Peru's unelected administration. In a statement, the U.S. State Department stated, "The U.S. commends Peru's institutions and authorities for safeguarding democratic stability. Troubled by violent demonstrations and reports of attacks on the press and private property, the U.S. recognizes Dina Boluarte as the country's president." When Castillo moved to dissolve Congress, he cited Article 134, and he made it clear that it was only going to be a temporary closure. He said new congressional elections would be held as soon as possible. Yet the U.S. ambassador to Peru failed to mention Article 134 of Peru's constitution, which states, "The President of the Republic is authorized to dissolve Congress if it has censured or denied its confidence to two councils of ministers." The dissolution decree contains the call for elections for a new Congress. The U.S. Ambassador Kenna ignored all of this. Instead, she declared, "The U.S. emphatically urges President Castillo to reverse his attempt to close Congress and allow the democratic institutions of Peru to function according to the Constitution." By this, the CIA veteran meant that Castillo should simply allow the anti-democratic Congress to launch a coup against him. The U.S. Embassy in Peru subsequently published an official statement echoing exactly what Kenna had said. This was Washington's green light for Peru's right-wing-dominated Congress to overthrow President Castillo and for the state security services to arrest him without trial. So it's no surprise there have been headlines that read, "The U.S. egged on the coup in Peru." The move by Pedro Castillo to dissolve Congress ahead of a third impeachment motion seems to be the result of a pressure campaign with support from the U.S. But why would the U.S. be interested in a coup in Peru? One motivation behind the U.S. could be in Peru's natural resources. Peru has a wealth of mineral resources like copper, iron, lead, and zinc. Gold and silver are also found extensively. On the other hand, the U.S. has been against the group of left-wing presidents who have taken over in Latin America in what's called the pink tide, with many not leaning so much towards the West's economic and financial system, like from the U.S. After all, they did not reap the rewards that a Western capital system offers, which has turned out to be just a mirage. Brazil's President Lula da Silva has even said that it wants to move away from the dollar and decrease the dependency as much as possible. The CIA has organized many coups against democratically elected left-wing leaders in Latin America, from Guatemala's President Jacobo Arbenz in 1954 to Chile's President Salvador Allende in 1973, not to mention the attempts to remove the former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez.
Japan is allocating $320 billion in an effort to build up its military, a move that would be unthinkable under previous administrations. But now, under the Liberal Democratic Party led by Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, surveys say the budget has the favor of over 70% of voters. The military developments include extending the range of Japan's missiles, stockpiling of spare parts and other munitions, reinforcing logistics, developing cyber warfare capabilities, and cooperating more with U.S. and other like-minded countries. The extension of the range of Japanese missiles is only meant to be able to reach China, if the need were to ever arise, as there is no other reason to extend the range to around 1,000 kilometers. The reason why Japan feels the need to advance its missile technology is the escalation of tensions in the Indo-Pacific region. North Korea has, on multiple occasions, tested intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads, one of which landed a little too close for comfort to Japan. The China-Taiwan tensions are also cause for concern for Japan, as a potential military escalation could put Japan in danger as well. This is because of the large number of troops and massive amounts of supplies that the U.S. has stationed in Japan, which they would most likely take advantage of in case of an escalation with Taiwan. Here's what Prime Minister Kishida said with regards to the military build-up plan.
We can feel a rapid increase in the severity of the security environment around our country. In countries and the regions surrounding our country, a strengthening of nuclear and missile capabilities, a rapid military build-up, and attempts to unilaterally change the status quo through power are becoming more pronounced.
Kishida also emphasized on the issue of China as a challenge to its security. He said, China's current external stance and military trends are a challenge to our country's peace and security, the securing of global peace and stability, and the enhancement of international order based on the rule of law. To which Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin responded by saying, Japan disregards the facts, deviates from the common understandings between China and Japan, and its commitment to bilateral relations, and discredits China. Japan even believes that Russia is a threat to its security, albeit indirectly. Tokyo sees Russia's war in Ukraine as a dangerous precedent that might encourage China to carry out a similar operation in Taiwan and cause unimaginable disruption to world trade. By taking stances against North Korea, China, and Russia, Japan must look